This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back, my friends, to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. That was a bit of a switcheroo, wasn't it, at the end? There we had a really interesting guest tell us about something that's a little bit spooky. It's true, there's lots of spooky in the world, that's for sure. But in this hour, I will be speaking to someone who I have worked with on a few occasions. He actually helped me research for my fourth article in my Schwab series called Guido Goldman, the CFR and the German Marshall Fund. And he also co-wrote an article with me entitled The Non-Governmental Octopus, which mapped out how NGOs were originally used to defeat Soviet Russia and how that led to the current situation we see in Ukraine. But he's also someone who has done a lot of work on Syria, Iran, Turkey, and the Middle East in general. And those are all areas which are vital to study if you want to understand what kind of conflict we're heading towards in the near future. And we are heading towards conflict for sure. That is true. I can't make it go away, and I hope you don't shoot the messenger, but this conflict has been planned by the powers that be for many years. From the moment the Soviet system began to crumble, the West began to put all of their many tentacles to work on co-opting and undermining the East. Neoconservatism was having its heyday during this period of our history. In 1982, a paper known as the Yinon Plan was published by Oded Yinon, a senior advisor to Israeli Minister of Defense at the time, Ariel Sharon, which called for an aggressive geopolitics aimed at balkanizing Iraq and Syria by provoking sectarian division and taking advantage of existing divisions in the Middle East. A 1996 US policy document entitled A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm, was written by the Israeli-affiliated Institute for Advanced Strategic and Political Studies in Washington. The group was directed by Richard Perle, who was to become one of the key figures involved in the formulation of the Iraq War strategy by George W. Bush, or the strategy of George W. Bush, shall we say. The key aims which coalesced within these strategic papers included Israel's occupation of the West Bank, the taking of the Golan Heights, tick, the encirclement of Gaza, tick, the invasion of Lebanon, the bombing of Iraq, airstrikes in Syria, and many attempts to restrict Iran's nuclear capacities. And since then, we have seen these agendas fulfilled one by one. These were all actions which were part of a joint Zionist and fundamentalist Christian-led attempt to control the region, and if successful, would lead to the destruction of Palestine and the creation of Greater Israel. The pattern has been simple: divide and conquer. This has always been the strategy of all warmongers. After all, without division, there will never be conquest. They use the oldest tricks in the books to defeat us, and those tricks nearly always succeed. Vietnam, divide and conquer. Iraq, divide and conquer. Brexit, divide and conquer. Didn't really work out for them that well. COVID, divide and conquer. Still, every debate, every time, divide and conquer. That is the attempt. Whether they succeed at the end, they still cause a division and they still attempt it. And they get close as well. And we must learn the basics if we intend to resist their agenda. If we refuse to divide, we deny them victory nearly every time. And for that, we need really cool heads. We need to remember the point I will reiterate again and again throughout all of my work. The divisions they create begin in our own minds. If you stay logically minded, your beliefs cannot be divided, and you will never be conquered. That's a fact. Now, looking at green, just over at the chat, just before I continue, I tell you, people are really enjoying. Nice to see Holly Swinton in there. Fun to see. And Luca has joined us. And Holly, little Carol always causing trouble. If you want to come across to tntradio.live and have a bit of your say, if you have any questions for my next guest, who, like I say, is an expert in the region. He's a very clever young Turkish man who's an expert in the region of the Middle East in conflicts that are going on. He's an expert in many things, in actual fact, a real good mind. Then please put a queue before your questions and ask them. I'm sure he'll be happy to give them a go. He's a very nice guy. And another quick reminder, this is really important. It's coming up really close. This is 4th and 5th of May, remember, the Weekend Truth Festival. So that's not that far away. That's about 3 weeks away, isn't it, if my calculations are correct? If you'd like to see all of your favourite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemirani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizia, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to bring is a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. Food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because there's only a limited number of spaces still available. And remember, are you enjoying listening to TNT? Do you think we're doing a good job? Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover today's biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's news talk radio, TNT.
So, according to a new report by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, SIPRI, the world spent 2.4 trillion on military forces last year, the highest amount ever recorded. Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT News producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Ruckus, tell us more.
Sure. Well, at least as long as it's been recorded by this particular institute, but I'm not sure how many institutes keep track of such things. This one in particular, SIPRI, has been monitoring military expenditures since going back to 1949. So they know what they're talking about. So they released a new report on Monday. According to this, military spending is soaring across the globe. What a surprise, with particularly large increases recorded in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. No surprise here. Total global military expenditure was up 6.8% in real terms last year, reaching an all-time high of $2.4 trillion. If you want to understand the breakdown on this, this means that every single man, woman, and child on the planet was taxed an average of $306 for military spending last year. This is the highest rate since the Cold War. Wowza. Let's look at some of these numbers. RT says that the figure marks the steepest year-on-year increase since 2009, according to showings from the report, with the top three spenders last year being the United States, China, and Russia. Let's start with the United States, which spends more on defense than any other nation. The question is, do they do it for their own defense or for other nations' defense? Anyways, they ramped up expenditure by 2.3% to $916 billion with a B, which represented 68% of total NATO military spending. I can hear Trump screaming on Truth Social already. China allocated an estimated $296 billion to its military in 2023, with an increase of 6% up from 2022. That country, China, accounted for half of total military spending across Asia and Oceania. The report indicated that the Ukraine conflict has led to an increase in spending not only by Kyiv and Moscow, but also by a quote-unquote whole host of European countries. Russia's outlays rose 24% to an estimated $109 billion in 2023, according to CIPRI. The country's spending on its armed forces made up 16% of the total government budget, and its military burden, that's military spending as a share of gross domestic product, that was up 5.9%. Now, for Ukraine, they were the eighth largest spender in 2023. Were they spending their own money? Anyways, after a surge of 51% to $64.8 billion, CIPRI noted that the country also received $34 billion in military aid, with most of it coming from the United States, meaning the combined aid and spending equaled over 9/10 of Russia's. Ukraine's defense expenditure equaled 37% of GDP and 58% of the government budget. And then let's take a quick look at NATO. The study found that in 2023, NATO's then 31 members accounted for $1.3 trillion, which was equal to more than half, specifically 55% of the entire world's military expenditure. And in Europe, Poland had the largest increase by far, up by 75% to $31.6 billion. Wow. And whoever said war was a racket, they weren't kidding. Johnny, what say you?
Yeah, this looks like exactly what we've been watching since, in actual fact, the early 70s. The man we'll have on in a little bit, Calm Disley, he and I did an actual article. He helped me research an article about the German Marshall Fund. And in the early 1970s, the American establishment couldn't actually excuse spending massive amounts of money to focus on Soviets and the Russian Soviet sort of Western borders, because the people just wouldn't have it. You know, they wouldn't allow that sort of money to go. So what they did was organize the German government to give funding to the neocons at Harvard through the German Marshall Fund, who would then fund massive NGOs who would go over and do all of the nefarious business and spend on military spending without looking like it's coming from Germany. So it's like European countries, when they start spending big money, you know that they are worried. And to hear Poland, what you're saying there about 75% increase in military spending from Poland, that should tell everybody that they're expecting a big war to come. They're expecting a big military conflict. They're expecting it in Eastern Europe, and they'll expect it to emanate from whatever, the ashes of Ukraine, because that is what is being created. Now, the culmination of all of that funding for years and years through the East actually led to the events we see in Ukraine today. And a lot of those organizations that were funded to seed in war in the east of Europe and to seed in conflict between Russia and its neighbors and its the previous Soviet states, a lot of that funding came from the darkest recesses of our intelligence establishment. Nowadays, it's so much more balls out, isn't it? It's terrible what they're doing, and now they don't even need to hide it. They don't need to funnel it. They don't need to put it through conduits. They just say, we're going to give you trillions, here you go, Ukraine, here's a trillions, and here's a trillions over here, and billions and trillions, and it all becomes comical after a while. We have to realize that the majority of our taxes are actually going to slay people in other countries who we've never met and we wouldn't have any problem with. So not a surprise at all. Is there a comprehensive list somewhere, do you know, Ruckus, of the people who were involved in this in military spending and how much they spend?
Like the people or the countries? Because the countries are broken down for sure in the CIPRI report, and they have a website, so just search for CIPRI, SIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. They do an annual report every year. This one just came out on Monday. So it should be really easy to locate. Al Jazeera did a write-up about it, as well as RT. The only other places I found talking about it are all military magazines and newsletters and places like that. But the mainstream media is not talking about it, Johnny, interestingly enough. But we are here over at Today's News Talk TNT.
Yes, we are. And we will continue talking about it. Well, thanks, Ruckus, for coming on, reporting a bit of that. And I'll see you tomorrow. I'm sure you have a lovely day, all right? Excellent.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Politico: German transport minister threatens, quote, indefinite driving bans on weekends to meet climate goals. Yay! Roll out the barrel. There you go. This is the akin to Stalin's five-year plan, the Chinese agricultural revolution, so to speak, where bureaucrats, usually mid-level, enforce these diktats from high-level bureaucrats and politicians from big summits like UN climate summits. And each sector of the economy has goals. And if you fail to meet them, drastic action may be necessary.
Mark Morano on Today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor, creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. Just looking across over at the chat, seeing people getting involved. I like that. If you want to get involved in the chat and you want to ask some questions, do so. I can see that there's a lot of love out there for Ruckus. Lucas says, Ruckus talks cultured. Try Arkansas. And Holly says, few people give as cool a voice as Ruckus, though. And Wild Heather talking, dollar, dollar, dollar. They get us to pay for their weaponry and bombs, which they blow us up with. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And there's some really interesting stuff about that. When I was talking to Ruckus there, and I was saying about the German Marshall Fund setting up to basically be given, I think the German government in the early 70s gave them 150 million, which you can imagine back then was quite a lot of money. And that was to fund the German Marshall Fund out of Harvard to really like focus in on creating an NGO army that could be used to destabilize, of course, you know, divide and conquer east of Europe. Now, what a lot of people don't realize, the German Marshall Fund was headed at that point by a guy called Guido Goldman. And you may say, Guido Goldman, who's Guido Goldman? Well, he was at Harvard for quite a while. He was also the best friend of Henry Kissinger. They were flatmates. He organized his 50th birthday party, a 50th birthday party, which was quite amusing, actually, because it happened just after the news came out about Watergate. And just after a load of people who would be turning up at the party, because the party was going to be full of people from the press. And Kissinger had actually authorized the intelligence establishment to phone tap nearly all of the people who were going to the party to see what they were going to say on the news, so that the establishment could be in front of any potential bad news and use it for their advantage, or maybe go and stop journalists from speaking. And when you actually listen to the people, because there was a lot of reporters who turned up to report on this Kissinger's 50th birthday party, and a lot of the people who actually turned up at Kissinger's party were people who were asked questions like, how do you feel about Mr. Kissinger and others listening to your every word, your private telephone conversations? And most of them were saying, oh yes, you know, well, it's just the way things are. Only a couple didn't turn up. The majority of them still, they just, like good doggies, they just said, no, this is part of the job, this is part of what we do, and you know, etc., etc. But Guido Goldman was an extremely fascinating figure, because again, it's more than just he was the flatmate of Henry Kissinger. It's more than he was just the head of the German Marshall Fund, which was called by many a CIA operation. And on the opening of the German Marshall Fund, all of the people who came to the opening were nearly all CFR members, Council on Foreign Relations, including the heads of the CFR for the past 10 years, all turned up for the opening. But in actual fact, Guido Goldman's father is someone very important, historically speaking. His name was Nahum Goldman, and Nahum Goldman is one of the founding fathers of Zionism and the State of Israel. He was actually working for German military intelligence back in about 1916-17, and later on left Germany and of course opposed Hitler and looked to try and get support for the creation of Israel, eventually succeeding in that, but also was someone who did not agree with how Israel were going about taking over Palestine and the actual idea of how it was going to be divided and separated. He saw that as a move towards something that would end up being perpetual limited warfare, which is part of the reason why they created that. They need the instability that we see today. And how do we see that instability? Well, we see that while Palestine and Israel fight against each other, all of the regional countries surrounding it are all on tenterhooks. They all know there's this big power around the corner. America and Europe could get involved if Israel are at all threatened. But some of the regional powers are extremely, you know, they're big players. We talk about Iran very recently, and Iran has been obviously a major power in the region for a very long time. But if you think about the other major players, well, you've got Syria, of course, and you've got Lebanon, but you've got Turkey sitting right there. And Turkey is a massive power, something that people don't realize quite how powerful Turkey is and what they which side they're on, because Turkey could potentially flip between either side depending on how it goes. Now, I'm having a look across back at the chat here and seeing lots of people having a fantastically long conversation. I'm really happy that people are getting involved in the chat. And if you do have any questions, if you do have anything to say, like little Carol who's saying, how are Israel going to drop all those bombs then, BBC? You know, this is a good, really good place for everybody to have a conversation and talk about the issues of the day, of course. And if you've got a few gifts here and there to get involved as well, well, why not do it? Soon we should be joined by someone who will help me discuss this in more detail. But discussing this in detail is pretty difficult, partly because you're not allowed to talk about these things I'm not allowed to talk about the founders of Zionism and how their son became best friends with Guido Gold, with Henry Kissinger. I'm not allowed to tell you that in actual fact, Guido Goldman's mother was, Henry Kissinger's mother was Guido Goldman's housemaid once upon, well, Nahum Goldman's housemaid once upon a time, kosher maid, make sure all of the food that was prepared at the house was kosher. So we're going to go to the headlines now, and then we'll be back soon. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
Here's what's making news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Columbia University in New York City shifted to virtual classes on Monday, following safety concerns raised after a rabbi advised Jewish students to stay home due to safety risks. A recent CDC study reveals that the initial COVID-19 vaccine's effectiveness against hospitalization in children aged 5 to 18 declined significantly over time. Tony Bobulinski, a former associate of the Bidens, has filed a defamation lawsuit against Congressman Jamie Raskin.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Awesome. Welcome back, my friends, to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. As promised, I have a very brilliant young man to introduce you to today. And I first met Khan Disley a couple of years ago while I was researching for the Schwab articles, and we soon hit it off. He's an outstanding talent, and I soon encouraged him to help me with my research for the fourth in the series. Since then, we've co-written an article about the rise of non-governmental organizations in Eastern Europe and their connections with the CIA and Soros-aligned establishment, and how that's crescendoed into the Ukrainian war we see today. Khan Disley is a Turkish student in Paris, that sounds like a sting song, and has a great understanding of Middle Eastern politics. So without further ado, Khan Disley, welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. Thanks for coming on and speaking with me today. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm fine.
Always looking forward to it. Always happy to see you, Khan. Let's start off in home territory for you. It's being reported that the US are putting pressure on Turkey to stop a flotilla of ships packed with aid for Gaza breaking the Israeli blockade. Do you think the Turkish flotilla will succeed? And do you think this is a little too late?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to remember the geopolitical situation of Turkey in the Gaza situation, because Turkey is a Sunni majority country with a lot of politicized citizens that really care about the Gaza conflict. But at the same time, and it also hosts many of the senior Hamas officials in its territories. And it also, at the same time, is a NATO member and a close ally of the United States. There are many United States bases in Turkey, the İncirlik base and the Kürecik base. They're both very strategically important bases. So Turkey, in this position, is kind of in a strategic, is they're trying to strategically balance out the populace that really has sympathy for the Palestinian people that are suffering, but at the same time, it doesn't want to put itself in danger against the United States government. So while I believe that in terms of diplomatic aid and humanitarian aid, Turkey will always continue to support the Palestinian people, militarily, Turkey has never, and I don't think it will ever, fight against the enemies of Israel. Fight Israel with the allies, the axis of resistance. So with Iran, I don't think they're ever going to have military cooperation, at least in the sense that they're fighting a war against Israel. When it comes to the flotilla, I think this is very reminiscent of the Mavi Marmara incident in 2010, where a similar flotilla was in the Mediterranean Sea, trying to provide help to Palestinian civilians, but it was intercepted by the Israelis, where they killed 10 activists. So either way, it doesn't actually matter if the flotilla arrives, at least from a diplomatic point of view. Turkey can, at the end, just say, we at least tried and they prevented us.
Yeah, it's a very clever little gimmick if that's the way they do it. Now, Erdogan is speaking big language, though. He's currently denouncing the Israeli genocide in Gaza, stating, Hitler of the time, Netanyahu and his accomplices, will not escape accountability. At the same time, Israeli officials are encouraging actions to be taken against Turkey. Do you see a situation where regional, situation where they could be brought in? You said that they're not going to be part of a sort of an axis or an allied force against Israel, but would they ever look to going in on their own, do you think?
Well, many people, many experts, for example, Colonel Douglas McGregor, a few months ago, he said that he predicted that Turkey would join the conflict in April. And personally, I don't really see that happening because, one, it would be very unpopular, and two, even if Turkey wanted to do this, logistically, I don't see how that could ever be possible because it would have to go through the only neighboring country that Turkey also neighbors would be Syria. And there aren't that great relations with Syria either. So Turkey would have to march through Syria to somehow either fight Israel or help the Palestinian people. So this, to me, seems very unrealistic. It's more like Turkey is going to continue with diplomatic and humanitarian aid towards Hamas. That's what it seems like is going to happen.
Yeah. The Israeli foreign minister recently said that he gave the order to stop American investment in Turkey and imports from Turkey. Are things like this a signal that Turkey may end up realigning itself as an ally of the Eastern Bloc and give up their hope that they will be accepted by the West?
Well, I think this exchange we must put in a broader context because this announcement came after the Turkish local elections in March. The Turkish local elections happened and the Justice and Development Party suffered actually huge losses. For decades, they've been winning local elections as well. But this time, the more fundamentalist, the New Welfare Party, they were accusing the Justice and Development Party of continuing trade with Israel. And many of the AKP supporters decided that they want to move towards the more fundamentalist side. So the ruling party lost a lot of votes. And in response to this, the Trade Ministry of Turkey decided that they were going to reduce trade with Israel. And obviously Israel in response said that, well, this is unacceptable and we're going to pressure the United States to put sanctions on Turkey. So this also puts the flotilla incident in context as well. And I believe that I predict that at least in the short term, aid to Gaza will definitely increase. And the flotilla is part of that context because there might be a significant shift in voting patterns toward the more Islamic fundamentalist parties if the ruling party does not show its unconditional support for Gaza.
That is a really good point there. I'm looking across at the chat. I see Hope, Love and Peace said the problem with Erdogan is he changes his mind all the time, basically goes where the money is, sadly. And a Dark Commission has a question for you. He says, could Turkey leave NATO?
I don't see that happening anytime soon because how would that even happen? Because there's many American bases that are already present in Turkey. Turkey would have to force them to close down, essentially. And I don't see, at least in terms of national security, I don't even think it's in the interest of Turkey to do this, at least at the moment, even though Turkey has been in many different conflicts because of NATO, and they've been drawn into Syria as well. I don't see how leaving NATO, at least in this dangerous situation, at least would even benefit Turkey in the short term. Maybe in the long term it will benefit them, which is why I think Turkey is playing really a mediating role between different parties, because the CIA chief also said, William Burns said, that he wants Turkey to be a mediated negotiation between Iran and Israel. This is very similar to what Turkey did back in the beginning of the Ukraine war, where they mediated talks between Kiev and Moscow in Istanbul, some peace talks. So it would seem like it's in Turkey's best interest to continue a strategically equitable policy between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc.
Yeah, that seems like a very good answer. This is why I wanted you on, Khan. You're someone who knows a lot about this region in details that a lot of people can't give. And you're so young as well. Look at you, young, fresh face, and you have all this information.
Well, thank you.
We're going to take a short break now. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Even the thought of dementia can feel scary. It's why we put off getting help, even though we've noticed changes in our thinking or memory. But an early diagnosis can change everything, giving you medical help and a support system around you to help you live better. Start with Dementia Australia's online checklist. Because the sooner you know, the more you can do.
You're with Johnny Vedmore on Today's News Talk, TNT.
I'm here with Khan Disley, and we're talking about the regional instability and politics within the Middle East currently, with these conflicts all sparking off and with all of this drama happening. I'm really happy you could join me, Khan. Were you surprised? I'm sure you weren't, but I'll ask you anyway. Were you surprised to see the US Senate finally pass the foreign aid bill, which is due to assist Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, while also subversively banning TikTok? Were you surprised that happened?
Actually, I was not, because it is quite clear that the powerful lobby groups in the United States are not very happy with TikTok. They want to provide aid. I believe it was $61 billion of aid towards Ukraine, military aid. And it seems like, to me at least, that there isn't even enough qualified personnel in Ukraine to benefit from this military aid, even though Zelensky is still asking for the aid. I don't see anytime soon a Ukrainian counteroffensive happening. I don't think Russia is going to lose the territory it possesses currently. And, well, it's just, in the large scheme of things, it's just a waste of money. But when it comes to the TikTok ban, obviously, I think many people that use social media have recognized that TikTok, as opposed to Meta, YouTube, and Facebook, Facebook is Meta now, but they are very pro-Palestinian. The content, at least, is very pro-Palestinian, because TikTok is obviously owned by China. In Facebook and in YouTube, you don't really see that much pro-Palestinian content. And the youth are definitely using TikTok. And the youth are really anti-Israel. That's I think, what most people have realized. And there was a leaked conversation between the head of the ADL, Jonathan Greenblatt, and someone, I don't know who he was talking to, but he was basically saying that TikTok is very dangerous because it is really affecting the youth to be more pro-Palestine as opposed to pro-Israel. And an example of these tech companies cooperating with Israel, it just came out very recently. It was published in the 972 magazine. Israel uses an artificial intelligence called Lavender, and this artificial intelligence is being used to detect Hamas members in Gaza. One problem with this is that the information that comes as input to this AI program is also coming from Meta, because if I remember correctly, it is Meta that owns WhatsApp, but the tech giants are providing personal details to this AI, Israeli AI program. And that's how, for example, if you're in a WhatsApp group with a Hamas member, it means that you will be on, you, it is likely that you will be on a kill list of the IDF. So, and this can only be done, this type of kill list can only be created because, well, WhatsApp is able to provide personal details to these organizations.
Completely unbelievable, isn't it? We've got to that stage. Now, we move off track a little bit. We've done a lot of work ourselves on Ukraine. How do you see that conflict eventually playing out, do you think?
Well, I don't think anyone on the planet right now knows when the war is going to end. It seems like Putin wants a long war of attrition. And I know many experts have claimed, well, it's going to end. They've claimed certain dates where the conflict is going to end. But I don't think anyone on the planet except for Putin knows when the war is going to actually end. Ukraine is not winning its territory back anytime soon. And the US, in some sense, already got what they wanted, which means the US does not care how many people have died in the Ukrainian war. What they wanted since the beginning is to deprecate the Russian army so that the US continues continues to have a strategic military advantage over Russia. And in some sense, they have succeeded because obviously Russia has spent many resources trying to beat Ukraine. But in another sense, they have not successfully won in Ukraine. So I think they would have wanted Russia to lose even more. And the attention right now is kind of moving away from Kiev and it's moving towards Israel in the Gaza conflict.
So what did you make of the Iranian missile strikes on Israel in response to Israel attacking the Iranian consulate in Syria?
Well, that was very interesting because we've been waiting for this attack. Iran has announced that they were going to attack Israel at least a week prior. And this was, I guess, the last straw after a series of provocative Israeli attacks on Iranian proxies and Iran itself. Obviously, the attack in Damascus killed many senior officials of the IRGC. And and Israel has also bombed the Iranian gas pipelines. They've attacked, Iran at least claims that Israel was behind the Kerman attack, where the funeral of Qasem Soleimani was taking place. At least 100 people were killed. So Iran at least had to respond, had to show deterrence at least that, yes, we can strike you as well. Yes, you can strike us, but we can strike you as well. And they at least struck three bases, the Nevatim air base and the Ramon air base in the Negev desert. And they struck a quite secret military base in the Golan Heights as well. We don't hear much about that. And they were able to penetrate the highly sophisticated Israeli air defense systems, which was very interesting. Some military experts have pointed out that the Nevatim air base, at least, is one of the most highly protected air bases in the world. It is protected by David Sling, the Iron Dome, Arrow 2, and NATO X-band radars. So the fact that with ballistic missiles, Iran was able to penetrate and at least hit the base, and Iran claims that it destroyed a couple F-35s in the Nevatim air base. This does show Israel at least that, yes, your air base is not, we can penetrate your air base as well. And Israel decided to respond, but the response was very weak, which I don't think most people, I don't think anyone on the planet knows why the response was the way it was. And if people don't know, it was in the Isfahan nuclear center that Israel tried to attack. And that's an Iranian nuclear site. And Israel has repeatedly said, if Iran responds to us, we will bomb your nuclear sites. And the response was very weak. It seems like the missiles shot by Israel were actually exploded over Iraq because there were missile parts that were found in Iraq. But to talk about the broader point, I would like to present at least a Sunni perspective that most people have been trying to bring to the table, where they claim that the Iranian and the Israeli conflict is actually a fake conflict. And this is very similar to another Western perspective. I've seen many people in the United States claim that the United States is funding both sides of the war, and they're funding both Iran and Israel. And to me, this doesn't seem very accurate factually, because it seems like the United States is only providing a security guarantee to Israel and not Iran at all. And many people I've talked to and I've seen have said that Iran actually is not in conflict with Israel, that this is a fake conflict to improve their recognition in the Islamic world. Even though it is true that this will improve their recognition in the Islamic world, I do agree with that. This doesn't mean there isn't a real conflict. Of course, the past 20 years, Iran has been the biggest security threat to Israel. They've funded proxies, they funded Hezbollah, they funded the Houthis that shoot down, that shoot rockets at Israel all the time. So, and their generals, Iranian generals, are being killed. So to me, this just seems like a real conflict. There's no reason why this should be a fake conflict. And there's no reason why Israel would benefit from this fake conflict. And all of the think tanks, the Israeli think tanks that report on what is the number one security threat to Israel, it's always, the answer is always Iran.
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially when you go back in history. When I hear people saying about how evil Iran has been since the Islamic Revolution, I seem to think, well, it must be true because of the Iran-Contra affair and the October surprise during 1980, the Iranians actually helped put George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan into power and in America, and that is pretty evil for sure. So I definitely think that they play both sides, and they're not the people to be trusted a lot of the time. But yeah, I mean, when you were talking about the Golan Heights there, Syria seems to have become a forgotten force in the region. Do you think they'll be drawn into conflict with Israel at all, or are their forces completely depleted by the war that they've already just got through now?
Well, I think you're correct. I think they have been depleted. I don't think Syria has enough forces to take the Golan Heights back anytime soon. It's occupied by Israeli forces. What Syria's goal or its strategic importance has always been is they provide logistical support towards Hezbollah because they share a border with Lebanon, and it's Iran that helps the Assad regime do this. Syria itself doesn't really have that much importance because their military is very weak. They could not possibly compete with Israel, but it's the support to Hezbollah which borders Israel is why they're important.
So how do you see this conflict in Gaza going forward? Do you think the Israelis will be stopped, or will genocide continue for the foreseeable future?
Well, an interesting thing is the US elections are also coming up. So this is actually, I think, highly relevant, because the only reason Israel can do what they can do and provoke Iran, and because they want a direct confrontation between Iran and the United States, that would solve their regional problems. They'd be a regional hegemon. And in order to do this, they're obviously continuing with these attacks. And the United States, we know that there's an election coming up, and both parties do benefit from Israeli support. Israel does have a lot of say in US politics as well, and Netanyahu was at least friends with Donald Trump. And Biden has to balance things out because he knows that he is losing supporters in this conflict. Everyone's blaming Biden. People are saying he's incompetent. And if he's going to run for election again, he also needs to make sure, if he wants to win, at least has a chance of winning, he needs to also get Netanyahu on his side, or at least he needs to get Netanyahu not be against him as well. So even though it is clear that Biden is very annoyed by Netanyahu's behavior, he can't really say much because he knows in the upcoming elections he will lose. And the Rafah operation that is upcoming, we don't know when it's going to happen, but we know that Israel is actually running out of time because the popular support is not with them. And they will try to push out Gazans towards the Sinai Peninsula. And I actually published this on my Twitter before, that there were documents that show that after they've pushed out refugees to the Sinai Peninsula, which there are already 10 cities in Rafah, but they want to spread these people to Qatar and the Sunni states and Turkey as well. So we don't know when the Rafah operation will happen, but I don't see the United States saying no to Israel anytime soon.
Yeah, completely agreed with you there. How long until the US, UK, Germany, and other Western powers stop giving aid to places like Ukraine? Or do you think it will continue until World War III is upon us?
Well, hopefully not, but honestly, I have no idea. I hope that, for example, France, I hope that France does not directly confront Ukraine, confront Russia. It seems like, because there were talks where Macron was saying he was going to directly confront Russia, this would directly lead us to World War III. Iran directly confronting, or United States directly confronting Iran, this would also lead to World War III. So hopefully not. Hopefully the attention is people are getting sick of the war in Ukraine. But time will tell. We can't know.
So why do you think the US and UK citizens, for instance, accept billions going towards murdering Palestinian civilians and a neocon push to destabilize Ukraine? Why do the citizens accept paying for this?
Well, I don't think they do accept that. I think if there was a referendum to do this, I don't think it would pass very easily. It's the ruling class that really wants to provide aid to these countries. And even though they're technically democracies, I don't think they get much say in this type of foreign policy, I guess, choice. They don't really get a choice in foreign policy. You look at the United States, there's elections every 4 years. The United States foreign policy is always the same. And if there was a referendum to say, well, should we send more aid to Israel? I think most people would actually say no, because there's very little support anymore.
So who do you think is actually responsible for the anti-Russian sentiment in Ukraine?
Well, it is for sure has been cultivated by a group of Western NGOs that operate as, well, they're the civil side of the CIA, because the CIA has been running a covert war in Ukraine for a very long time. And they want to at least convince the Ukrainian population that Russia is evil and that they should join NATO. And this was done through NGOs such as the National Endowment for Democracy, which gets funding from USAID, Freedom House, Chatham House. These NGOs and the Open Society Foundation, run by George Soros, obviously. These foundations, what they want to do is basically run protests and false flag operations so that the current regime that is maybe Russia friendly gets toppled, gets called a dictator, so that a more US friendly regime, like for example what happened in 2014 in Ukraine, the Maidan, where Yanukovych was toppled, a pro-Russian government was toppled, and in place Petro Poroshenko, a pro-NATO government was put in place.
So who benefits totally from a destabilized Ukraine and Middle East, then, do you think?
Well, the United States definitely does, in the sense that if their goal is to deprecate the Russian military, they don't care if there's destabilization in Europe. They would rather see a destabilized Europe than a strong Russia. And in the Middle East, honestly, nobody really, except for Israel, benefits from the situation. Even the United States, you could say they're losing their Arab allies, which that's not really in the benefit of the United States, because in the region, nobody really considers the United States to be world's policeman, or at least be a fair arbiter of international law anymore. They've lost all legitimacy. And that was the legitimacy that the United States used to rule over different parts of the world before, that they want to keep international order in place. But obviously the hypocrisy was seen after the October 7th attacks, because every country in the world except for the United States basically wants ceasefire in Gaza, and they have been isolated in the international scene. So I don't really see anyone benefiting from this, except for the war hawks, people that want to produce weapons, raise the international scene. So I don't really see anyone benefiting from this, except for the war hawks, people that want to produce weapons, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, the military companies, and also people that want to support Israel.
Yeah. Listen, you've got such a big mind for a young man. Thank you, Khan Disley, for all your work and for coming on today. Can you tell people where they can find your work quickly?
Sure. You can find my work on Twitter, Khan_Disley, and you can find the link to my Substack there as well.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on, Khan. Have a nice day, all right?
Well, thanks for having me. You too.
Awesome. Well, thank you to Ben Rubinstein, Bruce, and Khan Disley for coming on the show today. I hope you're all leaving with a little more wisdom than you arrived. And of course, as always, thanks to everyone in the chat. I've really enjoyed it. Always totally awesome to have you here backing me up. Stay tuned for the Mark Morano show up next. Until we see each other again, my friends, stay safe, stay awake, don't go changing, and thanks for all the support. See you tomorrow on today's News Talk, TNT.